Chapter 24. Hiram Yeager returned to his computer complex after lunch, carrying a large cardboard box with a basset hound puppy inside that he'd saved from the city pound just hours before it was scheduled to be put to sleep. Since the family golden retriever had died from old age, Yeager had sworn that he had buried his last family dog and refused to replace it. But his two teenage daughters had begged and pleaded for another one, and even threatened to ignore their school studies if their retriever wasn't replaced. Yeager's only consolation was that he wasn't the first father to be coerced by his children into bringing home an animal. He had meant to find another golden retriever, but when he'd looked into the sad, soulful coffee-cup eyes of the basset and seen the ungainly body with the short legs, big feet, and ears that dragged on the floor, he'd been hooked. He laid newspapers around his desk and allowed the puppy to roam free, but it preferred to lie on a towel in the open box and stare at Yeager, who found it next to impossible to steer his concentration away from those sad eyes. Finally, he forced his attention on his work and called up Max. She appeared on the monitor and scowled at him.
"Must you always keep me waiting?"
He reached down and held up the puppy for Max to see.
"I stopped off and picked up a doggie for my daughters."
Max's face instantly softened.
"He's cute. The girl should be thrilled."
"Have you made progress in deciphering the inscriptions?" he asked.
"I've pretty much unraveled the meaning of the symbols, but it takes a bit of doing to connect them into words that can be interpreted in English."
"Tell me what you have so far."
"Quite a lot, actually," Max said proudly.
"I'm listening."
"Sometime around 7,000 BC, the world suffered a massive catastrophe."
"Any idea of what it was?" inquired Yeager.
"Yes, it was recorded in the map of the heavens on the ceiling of the Colorado Chamber," explained Max. "I haven't deciphered the entire narrative yet, but it seems that not one, but two comets swept in from the far outer solar system and caused worldwide calamity."
"Are you sure they weren't asteroids?
I'm no astronomer, but I've never heard of comets orbiting in parallel."
"The celestial map showed two objects with long tails traveling side by side that collide with the Earth."
Yeager lowered his hand and petted the dog as he spoke.
"Two comets striking at the same time. Depending on their size, they must have caused a huge convulsion."
"Sorry, Hiram," said Max. "I didn't mean to mislead you. Only one of the comets hit the Earth. The other circled past the sun and disappeared into deep space."
"Did the star map indicate where the comet fell?"
Max shook her head. "The depiction of the impact site indicated Canada, probably somewhere in the Hudson Bay area."
"I'm proud of you, Max."
Yeager had lifted the basset hound onto his lap, where it promptly fell asleep.
"You'd make a classic detective."
"Solving an ordinary people crime would be mere child's play for me," Max said loftily.
"All right. We have a comet crashing to the Earth in a Canadian province about 7,000 BC that caused worldwide destruction."
"Only the first act. The meat of the story comes later, with the description of the people and their civilization that existed before the cataclysm and the aftermath. Most all were annihilated. The pitiful few who survived, too weakened to rebuild their empire, saw it as their divine mission to wander the world, educate the primitive Stone Age inhabitants of the era who endured in remote areas, and build monuments warning of the next cataclysm."
"Why did they expect another threat from space?"
"From what I can gather, they foresaw the return of the second comet that would finish the job of complete destruction.
Yeager was nearly speechless. "What you're suggesting, Max, is that there really was a civilization called Atlantis?"
"I didn't say that," Max stated irritably. "I haven't determined what these ancient people called themselves. I do know that they only vaguely resembled the tale passed down from Plato, the famed Greek philosopher. His record of a conversation that took place 200 years before his time between his ancestor, the great Greek statesman Solon, and an Egyptian priest is the first written account of a land called Atlantis."
"Everyone knows the legend," said Yeager, his thoughts spinning into space. "The priest told of an island continent larger than Australia that rose in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean west of the Pillars of Hercules, or the Strait of Gibraltar as we know it today. Several thousand years ago, it was destroyed and sank beneath the sea after a great upheaval and vanished. A riddle that has puzzled believers and is scoffed at by historians to this day. Personally, I tend to agree with historians that Atlantis is nothing more than an early saga of science fiction."
"Perhaps it was not a total fabrication after all."
Yeager stared at Max, his eyebrows pinched.
"There is absolutely no geological basis for a lost continent to have disappeared in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean 9,000 years ago.
It never existed, certainly not between North Africa and the Caribbean. It's now generally accepted that the legend is linked to a catastrophic earthquake and flood caused by a volcanic eruption that took place on the island of Thera, or Santorini as it is known today, and wiped out the great Minoan civilization on Crete."
"So you think Plato's portrait of Atlantis, in his works Critias and Timaeus, are an invention?"
"Not portrait, Max," Yeager lectured the computer. "He told the story in dialogue, a popular genre in ancient Greece. The story is not related in the third person by the author, but presented to the reader by two or more narrators, one who questions the other. And yes, I believe Plato invented Atlantis, knowing with glee that future generations would swallow the con, write 1,000 books on the subject, and debate it endlessly."
"You're a hard man, Yeager," said Max. "I assume you don't believe in the predictions of Edgar Cayce, the famous psychic."
Yeager shook his head slowly. "Cayce claimed he saw Atlantis fall and rise in the Caribbean. If an advanced civilization had ever existed in that region, the hundreds of islands would have produced clues. But to date, not so much as a potsherd of an ancient culture has been found."
"And the great stone blocks that form an undersea road off Bimini?"
"A geological formation that can be found in several other parts of the seas."
"And the stone columns that were found on the seafloor off Jamaica?"
"It was proven they were barrels of dry concrete that solidified in water after the ship carrying them as cargo sank and the wooden staves eroded away." "Face facts, Max. Atlantis is a myth."
"You're an old poop, Hiram. You know that?"
"Just telling it like it is," said Yeager testily. "I prefer not to believe in an ancient advanced civilization that some dreamers believe had rocket ships and garbage disposals."
"Ah," Max said sharply, "there lies the rub. Atlantis was not one vast city populated by Leonardo da Vinci's and Thomas Edison's and surrounded by canals on an island continent, as Plato described it. According to what I'm finding, the ancient people were a league of small seafaring nations who navigated and mapped the entire world 4,000 years before the Egyptians raised the pyramids. They conquered the seas. They knew how to use currents and developed a vast knowledge of astronomy and mathematics that made them master navigators. They developed a chain of coastal city ports
and built a trading empire by mining and transporting mineral ore they transformed into metals, unlike other people of the same millennium who lived at higher elevations, led a nomadic existence, and survived the disaster. The seafarers had the bad luck to be destroyed by the giant tidal waves, and were lost without a trace. Whatever remains of their port cities now lies deep underwater and buried beneath 100 feet of silt.
"You deciphered and collected all that data since yesterday?" asked Jaeger in undisguised astonishment.
"The grass," Max pontificated, "does not grow under my feet, nor, I might add, do I sit around and wait for my terminal innards to rust."
"Max, you're a virtuoso."
"It's nothing, really. After all, it was you who built me."
"You've given me so much to contemplate, I can't digest it all."
"Go home, Hiram. Take your wife and daughters to a movie. Get a good night's sleep while I sizzle my chips. Then, when you sit down in the morning, I'll really have information that will curl your ponytail."